and his breath curling away behind him like a vapour trail. Mort hung on with his knees and hands, and mostly with willpower, his face buried in the horse's mane. He didn't look down until the air around him was freezing and thin as a workhouse gravy. Overhead, the hub lights flickered silently across the winter sky. Below, an upturned saucer miles across, silvery in the starlight. He could see lights through it. Clouds were drifting through it. No. He watched carefully. Clouds were certainly drifting into it, and there were clouds in it. But the clouds inside were wispier and moving in a slightly different direction, and in fact didn't seem to have much to do with the clouds outside. There was something else. Oh yes, the hub lights. They gave the night outside the ghostly hemisphere a faint green tint, but there was no sign of it under the dome. It was like looking into a piece of another world, almost identical, that had been grafted onto the disk. The weather was slightly different in there, and the lights weren't on display tonight. And the disk was resenting it, and surrounding it, and pushing it back into non-existence. Mort couldn't see it growing smaller from up here, but in his mind's ear he could hear the locust sizzle of the thing as it ground across the land, changing things back to where they should be. Reality was healing itself. Mort knew, without even having to think about it, who was at the centre of the dome. It was obvious even from here that it was centred firmly on Stow Lut. He tried not to think what would happen when the dome had shrunk to the size of the room, and then the size of a person, and then the size of an egg. He failed. Logic would have told Mort that here was his salvation. In a day or two the problem would solve itself, the books in the library would be right again, the world would have sprung back into shape like an elastic bandage. Logic would have told him that interfering with the process a second time around would only make things worse. Logic would have said all that. If only logic hadn't taken the night off too. Light travels quite slowly on the disk, due to the breaking effect of the huge magical field, and currently that part of the rim carrying the island of Krull was directly under the little sun's orbit, and it was therefore still early evening. It was also quite warm, since the rim picks up more heat and enjoys a gentle maritime climate. In fact, Krull, with a large part of what for want of a better word must be called its coastline, sticking out over the edge, was a fortunate island. The only native Krullians who did not appreciate this were those who didn't look where they were going, or who walked in their sleep, and because of natural selection there weren't very many of them anymore. All societies have their share of dropouts, but on Krull they never had a chance to drop back in again. Terpsich Mims was not a dropout. He was an angler. There is a difference. Angling is more expensive. But Terpsich was happy. He was watching a feather on a cork bob gently on the gentle, reed-lined waters of the Hakral River, and his mind was very nearly a blank. The only thing that could have disturbed his mood was actually catching a fish, because catching fish was the one thing about angling that he really dreaded. They were cold and slimy and panicky and got on his nerves, and Terpsich's nerves weren't very good. So long as he caught nothing, Terpsich Mims was one of the disk's happiest anglers, because the Hakral River was 5 miles from his home, and therefore 5 miles from Mrs. Gladys Mims, with whom he had enjoyed 6 happy months of married life. That had been some 20 years previously. Terpsich did not pay undue heed when another angler took up station further along the bank. Of course, some fishermen might have objected to this breach of etiquette, but in Terpsich's book, anything that reduced his chance of actually catching any of the damn things was all right by him. Out of the corner of his eye, he noted that the newcomer was fly fishing, an interesting pastime, which Terpsich had rejected because one spent altogether far too much time at home making the equipment. He had never seen fly fishing like this before. There were wet flies and there were dry flies, but this fly augured into the water with a saw-toothed whine and dragged the fish out backwards. Terpsich watched in horrified fascination as the indistinct figure behind the willow trees cast and cast again. The water boiled as the river's entire piscine population fought to get out of the way of the buzzing terror, and unfortunately a large and maddened pike took Terpsich's hook out of sheer confusion. One moment he was standing on the bank, and the next he was in a green, clanging gloom, bubbling his breath away and watching his life flash before his eyes, and even in the moment of drowning, dreading the thought of watching the bit between the day of his wedding and the present. It occurred to him that Gladys would soon be a widow, which cheered him up a little bit. In fact, Terpsich had always tried to look on the bright side, and it struck him as he sank gratefully into the silt that from this point on his whole life could only improve. And a hand grabbed his hair and dragged him to the surface, which was